And now we'll get to the six purposes of schooling, according to Dr. Inglis. School was intended on this continent to be, as it had been in northern Germany, a fifth column into the burgeoning libertarian condition where disenfranchised and oppressed groups were clamoring for some kind of seat at the bargaining table. School was to be a surgical incision into which the class-based management theories of England were to be inserted to interdict the liberty traditions. England's multi-layered social class is simply a modern-day representation of Julius Caesar's advice that when you're overwhelmed by the enemy, you divide them and conquer them that way by setting them against each other. The method was to be by infiltration into the minds of children out of sight of their parents. The well-read here won't be shocked. Theorists from Plato to Rousseau to Frederick of Prussia knew and taught explicitly that if children could be kept childish beyond its term in nature, if they could be cloistered in a society of children without any real responsibility except obedience, if their inner lives could be attenuated by removing the insights of history, literature, philosophy, economics, religion, if the imminence of death and the certainty of pain and loss can be removed from daily consciousness, if the profound reflections on one's own death could be replaced with the trivializing emotions of greed, envy, jealousy, and fear, young people would grow older, but they would never grow up, and a great enduring problem of supervision would be solved. For who can argue against the truth that childish and childlike people are far easier to manage than critically trained, self-reliant ones? And now you're ready to hear the six purposes of modern schooling taken directly from Dr. Inglis's book. The first function of schooling is adjustive. Schools are to establish fixed habits of reaction to authority. That's fixed habits of reaction. Notice that this precludes critical judgment completely. Notice, too, that requiring obedience to stupid orders is a much better test of function one than following sensible orders ever could be. You don't know whether people are reflexively obedient unless they'll march right off the cliff. Second is the diagnostic function. School is to determine each student's proper social role, logging the evidence mathematically and anecdotally on cumulative records. You probably thought that the kid or parents or neighbors or the region, circumstances. No, the school is to determine your proper social role and they're to fix you in that role mathematically on their cumulative records. Next comes the sorting function. School sorts children by training individuals only so far as their likely destination in the social machine, not one step beyond. Keep in mind, you're not listening to John Gatto. You're listening to the man for whom the honor lecture in education at Harvard is named. The fourth function is conformity. As much as possible, kids are to be made alike. Whatever the background they come from, they're to be made alike. This is not done from any passion for egalitarian ideals, but so that their future behavior will be mathematically predictable in service to market research and government research. Next comes the hygienic function. This one's my favorite. This has nothing to do with individual health, but it has a lot to do with the health of the race, at least as Inglis or Darwin or his first cousin Galton saw it. Hygiene is a polite way of saying that school is expected to accelerate natural selection by tagging the unfit so clearly. That's what all those little humiliations from first grade on, that's what all the posted list of ranked grades are about, so clearly that the unfit will drop from the reproduction sweepstakes, either in despair or because their likely mates will have accepted the school's judgment of them as terminally inferior. And last comes a fancy Latin word, the propaedeutic function. That's a fancy word meaning that a small fraction of lucky kids will quietly be taught how to take over management of this continuing project, guardians of a population deliberately dumbed down and rendered childlike in order that government and economic life can be managed with a minimum of hassle. It's that low down, nitty gritty, common purpose. Not Marx's grand warfare between classes and greedy captains of industry. It's simply so that management will have a minimum of hassles. Now, it's one thing to say you're going to do all those things, and another to actually do them. What, for instance, would the mechanism look like which could reduce people to a state where they would be compliant in such an arrangement? While Britain and Germany had conditioned their own populations for centuries to accept paternalistic direction from the political state, it hadn't happened to anywhere near that degree in North America, and a project of this magnitude could not just be rammed down citizens' throats. They would have to be taught to actually welcome it, increment by increment. If any of you have read Orwell's 1984, it was necessary before you could get rid of Winston Smith to compel him to love Big Brother. Because if you were forced to execute him hating Big Brother, you wouldn't know how many more Winstons were out there. So you had to adjust his mind. Now, in this system, if at any point public outrage became too loud, the scheme's managers were instructed to retract it a bit and wait until under cover of some national emergency like war or any other civil unrest, it could be sent racing forward again while people were looking elsewhere. That is how the formidable United States' ability to read and argue was deconstructed during the drums and tramplings of World War II. The plan, simplified mightily for the purposes of this talk, called for the infantilization of North America, the gradual dumbing down, the gradual demoralization, the slow, steady removal of critical responsibilities from families and their transfer to bureaucrats.